It's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Good to have you along on this Friday. Well, joining me first on today's Friday Wrap is WNIN's own Tim Jagalow. Republican U.S. Representative Mark Messmer held a telephone town hall this week. Messmer's office used a pre-screening format with a moderator to guide the hour-long event. As Tim reported this week, attendees to a community listening party were disappointed with the format.
Getting it here, securing America's energy independence. Could you speak to that briefly, Representative?
Sure, absolutely. I am in favor of an all-above energy approach. We need to make sure that we do.
At McCullough Library in Evansville, a few attendees to an informal gathering for the virtual town hall are on hold, waiting in the hallway on their cell phones for a chance to ask Congressman Mark Messmer a question. Laura Brown would like Messmer to sign a petition agreeing he won't send any district residents to a foreign prison.
We'd like him to commit to that. We were asking him to publicly commit to that, and he doesn't want to answer that.
So they declined to use that question?
Yes.
Okay. Can you say and spell your name for me, please?
Yes, it's Laura.
The petition is in response to the suggestion that President Trump could form an agreement shipping U.S. citizens to a prison in El Salvador. Tom Zita wishes he could ask Messmer for clarification on the waste, fraud, and abuse that cost-cutting agency DOGE says it's found.
But I just would like to know who's defining what waste, fraud, and abuse is.
This gathering is called Unmuting the 8th District, organized by Wendy Breithold. She also promoted a protest this spring outside Messmer's office. The overall frustration, in part, is with Messmer's lack of response to questions over Trump administration policies. This virtual format didn't do much to assuage concerns, like when he doubled down on the Gulf of America naming effort.
And the Gulf of America actually just makes more sense.
What? Oh my God.
Idiot.
Breithold says the screening system for the calls was complicated.
So we actually prepared like a sheet where we told people exactly what to do, and if that didn't work, they should try to call this number. You know, trying to figure out how to shed some light on this event and make it transparent for a group was very challenging, given that that was not at all the intent, that it be public.
Of the 30 in attendance, about 9 were able to at least offer a question to the congressman, but none were selected to be used in the call. The format was more like a live call-in show than a town hall, and there was no follow-up.
Once he answered a question or read his answer, whatever the case may be, he was done. There was no opportunity for follow-up. Like, people were silenced after.
So what would you have done?
In the first 30 minutes, more challenging questions were allowed through, such as this one about the tariffs.
Are you afraid to speak up? As I stated earlier, Trump's tariff negotiations are just part of making sure we get rid of unfair trade practices from our foreign trading partners.
After 30 minutes, comments were mostly either agreeing with Messmer's stances, such as being anti-abortion, or checking on progress to rename the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, to asking how Messmer can make permanent the cuts DOGE has made, or just to praise him on his fiscal policies.
Kudos, Mark. That's all I have to say. You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you, man. Great to hear from you, and like always, like I've done for my entire time.
To Breithold and some of the other attendees, most of it seemed very scripted and prepared.
Okay. Wow. Thank you for sticking through that. That was extremely frustrating. I'm really mad. I don't know about you.
They took time afterward to express their frustration and disappointment. Messmer's office did not respond to requests for information about the session, such as how many callers registered, how were questions chosen, and how can declined questions still be answered. For WNIN News, I'm Tim Jagalow.
And Tim joins us now here on the Friday Wrap. Tim, as always, thanks for the time.
No problem, John.
All right. Well, you mentioned a letter there that these folks wanted to compile. Has that happened? Do we know?
It has happened. Wendy Breithold published kind of a condensed letter, which
they'll, I'm sure, make available to Representative Messmer's office. Mm-hmm. And, oh, look, I printed it. And the opening line of it is Messmer disrespects constituents. So it's not a happy letter.
Right, right.
They felt that the process, the event was anti-democratic and highly controlled, more of a public relations stunt to avoid real dialogue. And they also kind of are critiquing the fact that it was very confusing and not necessarily easy to link up to it. And she shared some of the concerns that the district's facing that he'd like to comment on, such as the lost $20 million EPA grant and things like the ICE raids that have just come through. So, you know, they felt that a lot of the answers were questions were redundant and weren't very constructive. Yeah. So this letter is available. Those are just some highlights from the letter that she has shared.
Yeah, yeah. Well, since the town hall, have you heard from Messmer's office?
No, I have not. And I was hoping that I would. I'm not surprised that I didn't. I only heard from them one single time. And this was, you know, a month or so ago. Mm-hmm. And I did send questions after the meeting to the effect of that I said in the story, which is, you know, well, I'd like to get an idea of how many people actually registered. I mean, was it like 20,000 people? Was it so many people that it makes sense that people locally didn't get through? Or was it 50? And therefore, why didn't they get through? So I didn't hear from them. I also sent them the story once the story was published saying, feel free to get back to me and I can add to the story or maybe even do like an extra story on this.
Sure.
But in the folks at Unmuting the 8th District have not heard back from them either.
I see. Well, let's get a little context here if we can. You touched on it a bit in your report. Basically, the situation all around this virtual town hall.
Well, if you remember the news, and I think we've talked about this before, that basically right when GOP leaders started having town hall meetings in person, they were really angry. Constituents, the people that came were very, very angry. They were frustrated. And they kind of were just, you know, they were getting shouted down because people were frustrated pretty much immediately with Trump policies. I can't say everybody was literally, not everybody, but lot of people were.
A lot were, yeah.
Yeah. And so a lot of those that were held in person, you can watch these events, you know, there's a lot of shouting and et cetera, et cetera. So they were being frustrated and booed and et cetera. And even, you know, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson even said he suggests that lawmakers not hold in-person meetings, just do them telestyle. And it was throughout this atmosphere that the congressman really wasn't seemingly engaging with constituents during this time when a lot of rapid change was happening. And this is why protests were being scheduled to get him to talk. And again, the only time I ever heard from his office was when Wendy Brundholt had said, we're going to have a protest.
Right.
They got back to me when I asked questions and said, well, we are in constant communication with people. You know, we're with them on the phone and with social media. And, and you know, on social media, I don't know if they're talking about direct Facebook messages, because on social media, it's just mainly him posting something kind of generic and then people complaining, you know, angry about the things that are happening and asking why he doesn't talk to them about it. So,
yes, indeed. Well, now you had a few examples of the calls that came in that evening. Can you give some more details on what types of questions there were and how Messmer was responding?
Sure. And I, with my planning for stories, I figured, well, this is a 2-hour event. I'll just go there halfway through, get a good sampling of it. I don't have to be there for the whole thing. As it turns out, I should have been, because there was almost like a delineation between the first half hour and the second half hour, whereas the first half hour had more challenging questions, which I did not hear.
Yeah.
And the second half hour was a little bit more of the supportive questions or comments or questions that assumed that he was in agreement with the questioner versus being these kind of, you know, the frustrated questions.
Yeah,
so,
more challenging ones. Yeah.
And so I had to actually get audio from an attendee and and listen to it and pick out, you know. And so basically from everything that I could hear, you know, one of the first calls was actually a caller expressing concern over that deported man from Maryland back to El Salvador, Kilmar Abrego Garcia. You know, and Messmer responded basically saying that, you know, he was detained under the suspicion of human trafficking. A Jasper resident wanted to know what he would do to make sure that all residents and all Americans have access to due process. Part of Messmer's response was more about suggesting that people should follow legal routes to get to the United States and become legal citizens.
He did it on, they did accept an online question about tariffs, basically criticizing the tariffs, expecting that inflation was going to increase and hurt consumers. And you know, he talked about the 90-day pause in some tariffs and ongoing negotiations and other positive things happening to increase workforce productivity, things like that. Mm-hmm. So there were a few in that direction. Somebody also posted on Facebook his thoughts on VA cuts. You know, this person was very concerned about her father.
Right.
And, you know, he said, well, they're trying to find waste, fraud, and abuse with these cuts. They're still processing a record amount of disability claims. And he touted cutting DEI programs as a positive, a money-saving positive at the VA. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody else asked, would you be willing to have a state-level DOGE-type audit? And he says, that's not necessary. We're already being audited a lot. And
I see.
I thought that was ironic because I'm pretty sure that things are audited at the federal level as well. But
true, true.
I'm not an expert.
Yeah, yes. All right. Well, anything else, Tim, to add that we haven't touched on regarding this this meeting last Tuesday?
I don't know. I hope that there's going to be some kind of follow-up. Mm-hmm. There wasn't, in looking at Mark Messmer's social media, there was no mention of the results of the town hall that I could see. Mm. And it feels like there's engagement being avoided. But that's, I don't want to cross the line into commenting as a citizen versus a journalist.
Right.
But that's just what I'm seeing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we will certainly keep an eye on all of that. Stay tuned for more on that story, I am sure. This is the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. My guest is Tim Jagalo of WNIN. We're going to move on to another story now that Tim covered this week. And that is retiring Evansville Vanderburgh School Corporation Superintendent David Smith. He expressed appreciation for his time at the EVSC during his final State of Our Schools address this week. As Tim reported, a new superintendent is scheduled to start in July.
Thank you for being a blessing. Thank you for allowing me to be your superintendent for 14 years. Thank you. Take care.
That was Superintendent David Smith's emotional address to the district that he led for 14 years and held multiple roles for 43 years. On Tuesday, the Evansville Vanderburgh School Corporation held the 2025 State of the Schools address, presented for this last time by retiring Superintendent David Smith. He saw the district through the effects of the recession, severe funding cuts, and the pandemic. Smith says he'll avoid any new opportunities for a few months at the urging of his wife, Sarah.
She's been such a blessing in my life, 35 years and married in just a few weeks. But the first thing I'm going to do professionally and personally is sleep, something I haven't gotten a whole lot of in the last 14 years.
Still, during his speech, he said he'd do it all over again for the students.
I'll miss shaking their cold, sweaty hands at graduation. You are worth every sleepless night, everything, everything. You know, despite the challenges we've discussed, I know EVSC's future is bright, and EVSC will continue to thrive and will go on to bigger and better heights. We live in
Smith's retirement aside, he highlighted the familiar mix of accomplishments and challenges for the third largest school district in the state. He touted their fine arts investments and highlighted accolades by schools, such as New Tech becoming a national spotlight school. Smith says, looking back over previous presentations, he said he needed to share the scope of what they do.
Largest transportation, largest food service system south of Indianapolis. 4 million meals served. I don't think people understand the scope of that, 40 buildings. So I wanted people to see it that way. But at the end of the day, all that doesn't matter. It's the individual child in a classroom making certain that they have an outstanding teacher and that relationship that's formed with the teacher, the student, and their families. That's what's important.
Smith also teased a significant health fields-related partnership with the University of Evansville, which he said will be announced next month.
We're blessed to live in a phenomenal community. We have a great partnership that we're going to announce with the University of Evansville and EVSC. And I will say students in our Academy of Science and Medicine as well as in our Health Sciences at the Career and Tech Center. So really big announcement that will be made in about a month in June.
For WNIN News, I'm Tim Jagalow.
And Tim is still with us here on the Friday Wrap. Well, Tim, yeah, that was quite the emotional delivery there by Superintendent Smith. Perhaps you can give us a few more details about the accomplishments and challenges that Smith spoke of.
Definitely. And, you know, the first thing I'll say is that if you'd like to just watch and listen yourself, I'm not trying to give off responsibility here, but you can watch the whole address on our website.
Yes, indeed.
We actually, our PBS side, Mike Gray, he recorded it, edited it, and put it together. You can watch the slideshow almost like you were there.
Yes, indeed.
Do you want me to still talk?
Of course, sure.
Okay, fine. Well, you know, he talked about specialized programs and specialized and flexible delivery of education. Mm-hmm. You know, the Virtual Academy now has 200 students in it, he said, but during the pandemic, they had 3,400. He says 200.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
He says 200 is a little bit more manageable. He highlighted the junior ROTC. They've got an Army Gold Star status, apparently. Hmm. You know, they've expanded areas of advanced placement offerings, and they're getting better test scores. New Tech Institute is what it's
right.
called. Mm-hmm. They're a national spotlight school of about 350 nationwide. Early college attending students, dual enrollment. Basically, there's about 60 graduating with that every year, and they're saving a lot of money doing that. Hmm. He always talks about robotics, which is fun, and you know he mentioned that again. He's got a robot named after him this year. you know, he talked about the Academy of Science and Medicine, and how students are earning the equivalent of around $120,000 in scholarships due to this program. Mm-hmm. And you know, regarding challenges, funding is always a challenge.
Right.
When is it not a challenge? But you know, he shared a good explainer video on that. And again, you can see that online. It explains the multiple ways that things are funded, what can be funded with what money, and what can money not be used for in
a certain
account, whatever, you know. And so, you know, he said federal grants are part of their funding, and with uncertainty over federal grants, that does create some instability. Mm-hmm. But he thinks they're going to be okay in that area, you know. They're receiving a 6.5% increase over the next 2 years from the state. He says that's good, but EVSC will also now have to be basically eating the cost of textbooks for the students. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he says that the increase with that makes it less than inflation. Mm-hmm. So it's still not great, and Indiana also ranks poorly nationwide in funding in certain areas as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, state funding certainly an issue. It's become a bigger issue as of late. Well, as you mentioned, David Smith has had a 43-year career with the Evansville School District. During all those years, what other roles has he played?
He was able to rattle them off impressively quickly during the interview. But he said he started as a part-time assistant band director. He was in that role at Wrights and Bossy High School. He was the band and orchestra director at three schools. He was the assistant principal at Evans. Hmm. He was the principal at Evans.
Right.
Deputy superintendent, director of principal's support, director of school support, deputy chief of staff, assistant superintendent for business and HR, then finally superintendent. And he joked that he can't hold the job.
I see. Well, he certainly had quite the career with the EVSC, 43 years. Now, of course, as you also mentioned, as we know, David Smith will be stepping down at the end of June. A new superintendent will be taking over July 1st. Perhaps you can give us an update on the superintendent search.
And we have those stories online as well, because I've kind of been following it. But we should actually have a name pretty soon. We should have a contract available pretty soon. We've already heard some scuttlebutt on who it could be,
right?
But we don't know for sure, of course.
Right.
I believe the selections has been made already. They're working on a contract. That was the most recent news I heard. And as far as him, you know, he said, I asked him, how do you feel watching this process? Because he's still acting. He's still superintendent.
Sure.
And then, you know, Chris Kiefer was giving the updates on the superintendent search. How does it feel sitting there for those? And
Chris Kiefer, the school board president.
Yes,
right?
Thank you. And you know, he said it feels kind of bittersweet to see this process happening. But he said during the address that he actually was intending to retire next year, but he moved it up in order to give the new superintendent time with this current school board. And he gave them, you know, he appreciates them because of just the range of experience that they have.
Right.
And it'd be better for that superintendent and better for the school district to have more time with them.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tim, anything else to add that we haven't touched on here?
Well, I mean, just we'll have more on the superintendent when we get it. And yes, thanks indeed. For listening.
Yeah, sure. I think we could, in fact, have a name as soon as next week. But we'll see how that develops. WNIN's Tim Jagalow. As always, Tim, thank you for your good work this week. We certainly appreciate that. Coming up on the Friday Wrap, another story that caught a lot of attention this week is a bit of a surprise announcement by the city of Evansville planning to take over the emergency ambulance service. We'll hear more about that coming up on the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. Hope you can stay with us. It's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Good to have you along on this Friday. Well, this past week, a surprise announcement from the city of Evansville. Officials announced that the fire department will take over emergency ambulance service, ending a long contract with AMR. Here's a report compiled from this week's coverage. Mayor Stephanie Terry says the Evansville Fire Department will start providing the service in July of 2026. Fire Chief Tony Knight says the process starts now.
Over the next few months, we will begin procuring ambulances, hiring staff, and purchasing equipment. Our goal is to build a best-in-class service, a system that integrates our existing fire response resources, our skilled personnel, and our full integration with Central Dispatch to deliver fast and effective medical care citywide.
Officials say starting the service will cost about $7 million to be paid for by casino funds, but will produce revenue through ambulance fees. Knight says on average, residents should see quicker response times and a 25% drop in the cost of using an ambulance. The city also plans to hire paramedics and other personnel currently working for AMR. AMR would continue to provide emergency services outside the city limits and other services. The new ambulances would be stationed at existing Evansville firehouses. The city currently operates 14 stations. Another east side station is in the works. Stephanie Terry says a thorough evaluation was conducted before the decision was made.
This is part of, a broader effort for us to modernize city services. It also ensures that public safety really is better integrated and adaptable.
Terry also says the move is being made with an eye on state funding.
Changes from the state and funding, looking at property tax revenue and reductions and potential reductions, we're looking at everything. And this is one way for us to fill the gap.
In a message to employees, AMR officials said they were sorry that workers learned of the plan change through the news media and not from the company. AMR says it learned about the plan just before it was announced. The company also says it can't verify the city's claims that putting the fire department in charge of emergency ambulance service will lower charges and shorten response times. AMR is urging the public to ask deeper questions about how the funding will work. The company notes a handful of governments have announced similar plans depending on federal matching dollars, funding which is now, quote, very much in question. AMR says it has a long history of providing great care and innovative solutions in Evansville, including the recent addition of the 911 Nurse Navigation Program. Mayor Stephanie Terry thanked AMR for its years of service, but said the switch will better integrate public safety. And there's still city council action that will be needed as the process moves forward. Again, the city of Evansville hoping to take over the emergency ambulance service in July of next year. Well, coming up on the Friday Wrap, Jevin Redman will join us. We'll be talking sports in just a couple of moments. Also coming up on the Friday Wrap, the Weekend Notebook. Hope you can stay with us here at WNIN-FM. It's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Good to have you along on this Friday. And joining me now on the program is Jevin Redman with this week's Sports Chat. Good to see you, Jevin.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Thanks for coming in. Well, lots of things going on in the world of sports. Let's start with a high school sports update. I know you're keeping track of all of that.
Yeah, so high school baseball and softball season really in the home stretch here, about 2 weeks to go. Their postseason takes place that week before and week of Memorial Day weekend. But right now in high school baseball in the area, the SIAC standings, it is a tight race with about 2 weeks left in regular season. There are four teams that are 5-2 in the conference: Memorial, Castle, Jasper, and Mater Dei. North is right behind those teams at 4-2, and Vincennes is 5-3. So realistically, six teams could still win the regular season conference title. Some big games left. And this past weekend, they also had the pairings for the sectionals for baseball and softball. So about to hit the stretch run here. Right. One more high school sports note. I think it was maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, I came on and talked about all the high school basketball coaching changes, both boys and girls. And we have another one that just popped up this past week at Mount Vernon High School. Their boys basketball head coach, Joe Newcomb, has stepped down after six seasons as their head coach. And he commented in an article to the Courier and Press that he has accepted another job. It'll become public next week. But Joe Newcomb, no longer the head coach at Mount Vernon High School. Six seasons, he was 500 better in four of his 6 years there for the Wildcats.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about college baseball. I know that's something that keeps you busy, and that too is on the home stretch, right?
So this past week, actually on Wednesday, USI and UE played in the crosstown rivalry. It was supposed to be on Tuesday night, but weather postponed to today. And USI beat Evansville on Wednesday 7-5. They've taken two of three against the Purple Aces this year. They'll actually play one more time next Tuesday at USI at 6 o'clock. But those two teams are focused on a big conference weekend now, as USI will host Southeast Missouri State tonight at 6 o'clock, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, and Sunday at 1 o'clock. John, the Screaming Eagles are 10-11 in conference play, good enough for sixth place. And for Evansville, they go to Carbondale this weekend to play the Salukis of SIU. 6 o'clock tonight, 6 o'clock tomorrow, and 1 o'clock on Sunday. But the Purple Aces have some big games remaining. They're 8-13 in the conference. They're in eighth place right now in the Valley. And John, only the top eight teams make the conference tournament. They have just a one game lead for a postseason spot with six games left.
I see. Well, lots of college baseball action happening this weekend. Let's also talk about men's college basketball. I understand we've got some news from the University of Evansville.
Yeah, so, you know, both, really all the teams in college basketball trying to fill their roster for this next year. And, and the Purple Aces got a local player, Alex Hemingway, who was a Castle High School graduate back in 2019, just signed with the Purple Aces. He has 1 year left in his career, so Hemingway is coming back home to play for the Purple Aces. He was at Clemson for 5 years. He played in four of those seasons. He was hurt for a year, and he was actually at Vanderbilt last year. Did not play because he was injured, but still has 1 year of eligibility left. So he's coming back home, and the Purple Aces also had some exciting news that was released this week as far as their schedule for this upcoming season. Their first game will be at Purdue on November 4th, so the Boilermakers a chance to be the number one team in college basketball at the start of the season. The Aces will play at Purdue for their first game. They've also announced games at Notre Dame, and they're playing three games in the Virgin Islands around Thanksgiving.
Wow, that sounds nice. All right, well, that's men's college basketball. Let's move on to pro basketball, because the Pacers, they advanced in the NBA playoffs, and they've got another big game tonight, right?
Yes, they're in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, and right now up to 2-0 against number one seed, the Cleveland Cavaliers, a team that won 64 games during the regular season. But the Pacers won game one by 9 points and then had a thrilling win just the other night in game two. They were down 7 points with 48 seconds to go, and came back to win on a three-point shot from Tyrese Halliburton with 1 second left. They won by one, 120-119, so they're two wins away from advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals. They're at home tonight at 6:30, and then Game 4 will also be in Indianapolis on Sunday at 7 o'clock.
Yes, indeed. Those Pacers are on a roll. We'll see what happens this weekend. Well, you mentioned earlier about some rain. Well, rain postponed last night's Evansville Otters season opener, but they're going to try again tonight, right?
They are, yeah. So opening night 2.0, I saw they posted on their social media. They'll try again, but 6:35 first pitch. They're taking on the Gateway Grizzlies, and the Otters this year will be celebrating their 30th season. And so get out to Bossy Field. Should be a great night for opening night. And then I did see a lot of the promotions they had planned last night carry over into tonight. Same thing with the tickets. So another chance to see the Otters opening night tonight.
Yes, indeed. Take along a jacket, maybe even a blanket. It will get chilly tonight, but certainly no rain. The weather is looking great for the Otters. Well, speaking of rain, it was quite the muddy Kentucky Derby last week. What do we know about well, what's going to be happening at the Preakness is next, right?
Yeah, so, you know, Sovereignty was the winner. Journalism came in second in the Kentucky Derby, and it was, you know, a very rainy and muddy track, for the Derby, yeah. But real exciting race, and it sounds like Sovereignty will not run in the Preakness, so that eliminates any chance of a Triple Crown winner this year. And then there's also been some news that's come out the last few days about the jockey on that horse, Junior Alvarado. He's facing possibly a fine for overusing his whip in the home stretch on the horse. So there's some things going on with that. But what we do know for sure is that Sovereignty will not run in the Preakness.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a disappointment, but that's the way it often goes in horse racing. One other note I'll make, of course, a big news story this week was the new Pope being the first United States priest to rise to the papacy. And he's a White Sox fan, as it turns out. He's from Chicago. He's a White Sox fan. And Lord knows the White Sox can use all the divine intervention that they can get. Anything else to add, Jevin?
No, that just about covers it. I mean, we didn't talk much about Major League Baseball, but, you know, some Cardinal fans in the area are happy. They've been playing good baseball of late. They've won 5 in a row to swept the Pirates. They start a 90-game road trip tonight in Washington. You know, the Cubs still playing fairly well. They're in first place.
Oh, yeah.
And the Reds, they have struggled a bit this past week. Lost 3-4 in Atlanta, but still right around 500. So it's about a month, a little over a month in the season, but the Central Division more competitive than maybe we thought so far.
Yeah, that's the NL Central. Yes, indeed. Well, that's Jevin Redman with this week's Sports Chat. As always, Jevin, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, coming up on the Friday Wrap, it's the Weekend Notebook, straight ahead on your public radio station. It's the Friday Wrap on WNIN-FM. I'm John Gibson. Good to have you along on this Friday. It's time now for the Weekend Notebook on the Friday Wrap. Lots of things happening around the area this weekend. Let's start off with this evening, a jazz concert at Trinity United Methodist Church. Tom Jury performs at the church on Southeast 3rd Street here in Evansville. The show is at 7 p.m. It's part of the 200th anniversary celebration at Trinity. This concert is free and family-friendly. Again, that's Tom Jury performing at Trinity United Methodist Church this evening at 7 here in downtown Evansville. Moving on to tomorrow, Saturday, a busy Saturday in the Evansville area. For one thing, we have a sidewalk sale here on Main Street. It's the 7th annual sidewalk sale presented by Heritage Federal Credit Union. It's from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Main between 1st and 6th Streets. Organizers say the street will be lined with 150-plus shops, makers, and community members selling their wares. Again, that's the 7th annual sidewalk sale along Main Street from 9 until 2 tomorrow here in downtown Evansville. Also happening tomorrow, it's a book signing with Sean Redenbaugh. The local author will be signing copies of his new book, 1,000 Shades of Red. It follows a college freshman at IU through 4 years of self-discovery, friendships, shenanigans, temptation, and the intense moments of love gained and love lost. The event is from 12:30 to 3 p.m. at Blue Stocking Social at Lincoln and Weinbach here in Evansville. Again, that's a book signing with author Sean Rodenbaugh taking place at Blue Stocking Social tomorrow here in Evansville from 12:30 to 3. Also happening on Saturday, a historic buildings tour at Angel Mounds. In honor of National Historic Preservation Month, Angel Mounds is offering a tour of the historic buildings on the site off Pollock Avenue. That's happening from noon until 1. Admission is just $2 per person with a 25% discount for Angel Mounds members. Again, that's the historic buildings tour happening at Angel Mounds tomorrow, Saturday, from noon until 1. Another historic tour, or at least a walking tour, that's at Oak Hill Cemetery. That free event by Historic Evansville is called Here Lies Evansville. The tour will be led by local historian Dennis Au and Timothy Miller. Interested residents should meet at the Front Gate Pond parking lot at 1 p.m. And a note, we're told that Dennis Au is moving out of state, so this is expected to be his last guided tour here in Evansville. Again, that's the Oak Hill Cemetery walking tour happening tomorrow, Saturday, at 1 p.m. Also happening on Saturday, it's a way late play date at SEMO. The Children's Museum here in downtown Evansville goes 21 plus for an evening of live music, games, and adult beverages across the three floors of SEMO. The event is from 6 to 10 p.m. Tickets are $35 in advance and $40 at the door. Again, that's a way late play date at SEMO, the Children's Museum of Evansville. That's happening tomorrow evening from 6 to 10 p.m. Also happening Saturday evening, music on the Newburgh Riverfront. The band American Pie performs from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Allen Family Amphitheater. Admission is $5. Again, that's a performance by the band American Pie happening tomorrow evening on the Newburgh Riverfront at the Allen Family Amphitheater. Moving on to Sunday now, St. Boniface Grotto Tours. Also as part of Historic Preservation Month, free tours of the church's underground grottos will be offered between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. Sunday at the church on Wabash Avenue. Also happening Sunday afternoon, Sunday Jazz at the Boca Lounge. John Lutz and the Sleepwalkers will be performing beginning at 2:30. The event is at the venue in Haney's Corner, and it is free. Again, that's John Lutz and the Sleepwalkers, Sunday Jazz at Boca Lounge, starting at 2:30. And then on Sunday evening, we have Dancing on the Riverfront. Evansville Latin Dance is throwing a free, family-friendly, all-ages event outside the pagoda. The evening begins with introductory salsa and bachata lessons. No partner is needed, and all skill levels are welcome. Again, that's Dancing on the Riverfront from Evansville Latin Dance. It starts at 5 p.m. and runs until 8 p.m. Sunday evening on the Evansville Riverfront. If you have an event you'd like us to share here on the Weekend Notebook, send it to me, John Gibson. That's jgibson@wnin.org, and we'll get your event on the Weekend Notebook. That is going to wrap up this week's Friday Wrap. I'd like to thank everyone who joined us today, including WNIN's Tim Jagalow. A big thanks for his work this week. Also, thank you to Jevin Redman, not only for the sports chat, but for also engineering today's show. Also, thanks to Mariah Winnie for social media support here at WNIN. A big thanks to Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations for their support. Also, a big thanks to support from listeners like you. It's your support that makes shows like The Friday Wrap available and online and on the air here at WNIN. I'm John Gibson. Have a fine, fine weekend. And for this Friday, that is a wrap.